For a woman who spent months living in outer space, Katie Coleman is one of the most down-to-earth astronauts you'll ever meet. She's a mother, a musician, and a scientist, and she splits her time between Massachusetts and Texas when she's not on assignment in space or working on NASA's Aquarius underwater laboratory. And she's our special guest right now. I am taxpayer Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. I spend a lot of my tax money sending Katie Coleman up into outer space. Is it worth it?
I'm a scientist. That's the way I was trained. There's a lot of different things that we do up in space that we just plain old can't do down here. And it's because of that lack of gravity or maybe that lack of atmosphere. One of my favorite applications, because it pertains directly to me and a lot of people I know, is osteoporosis. Mm. When we go up there, we lose bone because we're not walking around on our feet and sending those messages to our brain about needing bone and building bone. We lose bone at about 10 times the rate of a woman who has osteoporosis who's 70 years old.
Wow.
So what she loses in a whole year, I lose in a month if I'm not doing something to stop it. And so I'm part of a really interesting osteoporosis experiment to understand more about how we lose bone, how we keep bone, how we rebuild bone. And because it happens so fast to us, it makes us good subjects because it's really easy to measure in terms of samples and things.
Wow. So I thought we got Tang and Velcro, but we actually get medical advances.
Oh, absolutely. And even heart function. Huh. Our hearts don't have to work as hard to pump blood from our feet up to our heads because they're not working against gravity. Right. And in some ways, they get kind of lazy and the muscle gets weaker. And it begins to resemble actually an older heart. And so I've done all sorts of, 48-hour blood pressure and cardiac monitoring and all those things that one could wear. I have worn them.
Yeah.
And it all, adds up to lessons that we're not able to learn down here. Mm-hmm. But we're also learning the more physical experiments, things like combustion, because things burn a little bit differently up there without that sort of hot air balloon effect where those lighter gases would rise. Things burn more slowly, and it allows us to study the process, something that we have to measure in like less than a second down here on Earth.
Wow.
We can actually measure over 30 or 40 seconds. So we're learning about pollution. We're learning about soot production, things like that. And we could go discipline by discipline, and there would be some unique experiment that we can do up there that we just can't do down here, and I loved being up there to do them.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Katie Coleman, who's an astronaut for NASA and has spent 6 months up in the space station. Katie, let's talk more about just being a human being up there. Just what's it like eating? Is that, there's a big part of travel. We travel to eat interesting stuff. How's the food up there?
I tell people that nobody I know goes for the food.
<That's>
and true. I went up there with an Italian guy, Paolo Nespoli, who's just wonderful. And I'd never been to Italy before I went to the space station and lived up there with him. And there was just something genuinely sad about Paolo, about the food, where he would just look at this like mashed package of lasagna and just go, what?
Yeah.
And I didn't understand it till I went to Italy, and then I thought, oh, poor Paolo.
see, an English astronaut would have no problem with that. Just
they
kidding.
Might like the
just
food
kidding.
A little better.
So, but what's some surprisingly tasty thing? I mean, I remember I went to a space thing here at Boeing, and they had some kind of dried ice cream that wasn't even cold or something. What's something fun that you eat?
We vote about the food, and the ice cream actually went away quite a while ago. I would say the food is physically fun.
So you can play with your food.
Exactly. And I think that there's a part of all of us that are small children that go up there.
Yeah.
But if you end up, you lose your grip on something, or sometimes because it doesn't weigh anything, you forget you have it and you let go and you forget. And then suddenly that peanut butter sandwich that's open-faced is like just floating. And then wherever it lands, that is where it's going to be. And then you're going to clean it up.
Because sticky is still sticky without gravity.
You would not believe how far a little splurt of barbecue sauce can go.
That opens
it's
up all sorts
mess.
Of problems. So are some astronauts sloppier eaters than others? Somebody's
well,
got to clean up.
I'm a new tablecloth kind of person. My husband knows that after I've eaten dinner, we're going to need a new one. it's a little worse,
in
space.
I want to try this. That sounds so much fun. Now, when you're up there, what do you get homesick for when you're up there for a couple of months?
Everybody's different. I think your family just comes way before anything else.
You must have good Skype kind of connections and stuff with your loved ones.
We work at it. You know, we have a good internet protocol phone. So I can talk to my family on the phone about 40 minutes every hour if I had enough time or they had enough time to talk like that. My son was 10 when I was up there. And, you know, when you're 10, you don't really want to talk to your mom like every day. Well, how are you? How are you? How's space? How's Earth? I mean, after a little while, he's like, you know, Dad, you know, I've talked to her. Tell her I'm fine.
Hi, Mom. How's space? I just find that so funny. Hey, Katie, when you're up there and you're sleeping, is your sleep the same up there? Do you dream differently? Do you get a straight 7 hours or do you take medicine to help you sleep?
Everybody's different. I'm a great sleeper. I can sleep anywhere, standing up, laying down, or floating around the space station. So that's a special gift.
If you have a lumpy mattress, it doesn't really matter.
That's right.
Do you just harness yourself or do you just kind of all float around?
We each have a cabin, which I think it's really important to have a place that is yours, that you can shut the door. They're very soundproof, which is nice. You can have a private conversation with your family, which I think is really, really nice. Most people have a sleeping bag where you, it's like a thin blanket that you kind of climb into and your arms can stick out. And most people will attach that to the wall so that they don't float around. But I'm kind of small, and every once in a while, I would just leave it unattached and wake up in the morning, and you really wouldn't know which way was up and which way was down.
So you could close your door in your cabin, and you could just decide in a fun, loving kind of way, I'm not going to tie myself in, and you could just float around all night while you sleep.
Absolutely.
Do you do that?
Sometimes. And we dream. I would say most people I've talked to share this with me in that we dream in zero-G as well.
Now, what does that mean?
Meaning that when I think about going somewhere in my dream, I fly there.
Oh.
I don't walk. Walking's really awkward. Shoes are really awkward.
Yeah.
And so we kind of sort of give ourselves a push. And wherever you push yourself, there you go. And to me, it's like living in the world of Peter Pan.
You get spoiled.
And I just loved
it. You get back down here with us mortals and you got to actually move your feet. Now, what surprised you from the view of space? Do you ever find yourself just gazing out the window? What do you enjoy looking at?
We look out the window, I'd say, as much as we have time for, which is never enough. On my very first space journey on the Space Shuttle Columbia, I was up there with a guy named Al Sacco from Massachusetts, and I'm from there as well. And we just happened to see Massachusetts for the very first time together, looking out the window. And he looked down and goes, oh my gosh, it looks just like the map.
It looks just like the map. Google Map, no, reality.
We try to add to Google Map. On our mission alone, I think we took 60,000 photos in that 6 months. So we take a lot of photos of the Earth. But one thing that's really different about the space station now, and I think it's a very human thing, is that instead of having just these small windows that are portals, where you look down and let's say you're in the Pacific and Hawaii is going to go by, if you're not looking in exactly the right place out that portal, Hawaii is going to be gone. There's a lot of ocean. But now we have what we call the cupola. And folks can see this on the web. You just go to the Gateway to Astronaut Photography. And on the top half, there's photos. On the bottom half, there's sort of stop action video. And you'll see our view out that cupola where there's a sort of series of diagonal windows all the way around and then one giant one above your head. And so you can look and you can see, in my case, you know, Cape Cod is coming and then you're there and then it's leaving. And for me, it just gives me more of a feeling of being present.
So when I buy my first ticket, I'm going to make sure I get the class with the big windows.
Yes.
Sure. Now, looking down at Earth, it looks like the map. When you look in the other direction, are the stars brighter?
The stars seem deeper to me and a little bit disorienting because they're more 3D, at least to me.
And 3D, yeah.
And it depends, you know, we're going around the Earth every 90 minutes. And so we're always looking in a different part of the night sky as well.
So if you blink, it changes.
Absolutely. So you have to kind of get those patterns memorized. Yeah. And they look a little bit different, you know, upside down. Like if you go to Australia and look up at the sky, it'll just look familiar, but at the same time, different.
So you see Orion's necktie instead of Orion's belt.
I didn't check, but next time I will.
Check that out. And do you stargaze differently when you're back down on Earth?
I would say I stargaze more wistfully.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Katie Coleman, and Katie's one of our astronauts. She works for NASA. She works for us. She's out there helping us get comfortable with space. It's a multinational effort and making lots of scientific progress. At the same time, we've been learning about what it's like to be up there. Katie, are there tasks that you take for granted on Earth that are especially complicated when you get up into zero gravity?
There's some really simple ones that are hard, and that is unpacking anything, moving anything. It's like thinking about, open your suitcase. What if everything floated out?
It's like herding cats, weightless ones.
But one thing I don't think we talked about yet, Rick, was the space station itself. We talked about a lot about the capsule and how small that is. It's like that smart car. But then the secret that we keep from everybody on the Earth is that the space station is enormous.
I don't envision it as enormous. Take me on a walk through the space station.
Well, it's hard to walk, so we have to fly, which is a little scary at
Hold
first.
My hand.
Okay. And actually, when new people first get up there, they're sort of clumsy and they're grabbing. You can only walk with your hands, really. So you're sort of grabbing all the things that you would hold on to and gripping yourself around the space station. And then you learn to fly. But often we kind of jump off that cliff a little bit too soon. And the new guys come flying through the lab and they knock everything off the walls that's Velcroed. And the experienced people are catching stuff right and left and putting it back on the walls. And then the new guys land at your feet looking like, you know, like new puppies that are just so excited. They're like, oh, look at this. Isn't this cool?
And you probably, the old timers roll their eyes and go, yeah, we got over that 6 weeks ago.
You know, actually, that is where I don't think any of us ever get over it, because the flying is magical.
Yeah.
And so if we start off, we could start off in the place where the shuttle would usually dock. And so you come in this hatch, if you came up in a shuttle, come in this hatch, and this is a series of train cars that are stuck together like with hatches. So they're big. It's like train cars without the seats or buses without the seats. So there's a lot of space. And in fact, you can get a little bit stuck in the middle because there's nothing to hold on to.
Oh, so like a sailboat that's stuck in irons with no wind.
Exactly.
So if you have no momentum and nothing to hold on to, can you paddle or you just sit there?
Paddling doesn't really quite work, but you really always have some sort of little bit of momentum. And actually, something it takes a while to get good at is to let go of something without imparting, you know, some kind of force on it. So we come in the hatch as if we came off the space shuttle. And to your right is going to be a sort of train car that is the Japanese module. And to your left is going to be the European module. And straight in front of us is going to be our four cabins that are, one is to the left, one's to the right, one's on the floor, one's on the ceiling. So it's a little ring of cabins. And then we're going to fly forward into the U.S. laboratory where we do a lot of the experiments, although we also do a lot of them in the Japanese and European modules as well. And then we're going to come into what we call node one. So node two is where we entered, and that's where things are attached. A node is a place where a bunch of modules are stuck together.
Uh-huh.
And now we're in node one, and on one side is the airlock, where if we're going to do a spacewalk, we'd put on our spacesuits. And so in node one, this is where we eat. So we've got the kitchen table, which isn't horizontal. It's actually like at a diagonal on its way down. And this is my crewmate Paolo Nespoli's brilliant sort of discovery, was that all of us used to fly from the lab to the Russian segment. And often we'd sort of like bonk our hip on the way by the kitchen table. It was just in the way. And Paolo said, you know, nothing on there is going to stay in one place anyway. Going to have to Velcro it or duct tape it or something, or bungee cord it to the table. So let's just move the table down just a little bit. Now it's kind of like an easel. And it's still a place that we can all gather around and be together and feel like we're eating a meal together, but we're not going to hurt ourselves as we fly by. But then if you take a right, you're going to go to the place where a lot of really important things happen. The first one is the treadmill. So this is one of the things that we exercise on. And so somebody would actually be coming horizontally out of the wall, running on the treadmill, and you can just sort of weave your way around them. Then you're going to be looking at the bathroom, a very necessary place. And I think that whenever any of us travel anywhere, you always want to have to be able to be comfortable about those things.
Check out the bathroom, yeah.
Exactly. And that's actually pretty fun stuff as well. And not as exciting as people think it might be. And that's good that it's not exciting. We like that to be boring.
Right. But there is, I won't ask you to get into all the details, but there are effective ways that you can go to the bathroom and not have terrible stuff floating all over.
Absolutely. I mean, I tell the kids not to try this at home, but basically we have like a vacuum cleaner.
Oh, that's nice. Good.
And you really don't want to try that at home because ours is very special. But, you know, and I'm always pretty graphic because, you know, I have kids.
thank you for the tour of the space station. And you've shared with just me, nobody else, the secret that it's a lot bigger than people realize.
It's giant. It's a really special place.
I bet you look forward to going back up there.
It was hard to leave. I would have stayed another 6 months in a minute.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's a magical place. It takes a little while to get good at doing things up there.
Once you go back up, do you snap right back into it, or do you have a few days of adjustment?
I think mentally, we learn that we just make an adjustment. I think it still takes a little time, and actually many people are sick at first. We've all had our times of being sick or not being sick.
What kind of sick? Is that a nausea because of the weightlessness, or what kind of sick would you be?
Yeah, that kind of nauseous, just because it really does a number on your middle ear. You know, when you kind of give yourself a push and fly across the space station, there's nothing that really tells your middle ear that you started. But then when you stop, it says, well, she stopped. But she never started. How did that happen?
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been traveling through space with astronaut Katie Coleman. Katie, what's next for NASA? What are you working on? And what's your vision for our space program, just to wrap things up?
In the immediate future for NASA, we're taking some of the things that we know how to do. We know how to send people and stuff to low Earth orbit. And we have a space station there that goes around our Earth every 90 minutes. And we know how to do that. That doesn't mean it's easy. That doesn't mean we take it casually. But it's the time to sort of transfer that work to our commercial partners, to companies that can build spacecraft in a less expensive and more flexible way than our government organization. And so that we're doing that transition, and I myself am working with some of those companies, helping to make sure that we all understand, you know, how things are going to be used once they get to space, and that people actually capture these things with our robotic arm up there. Mm. So that's the immediate future, but the beyond that future is happening right now as well. And that is that we are using the places that we can get to, that we can target, and those are asteroids and the moon and eventually Mars. And we're thinking, what do we need to go to those places? And what's the technology? How much do we need to be able to recycle air and water? What do people need to bring with them? How do we keep people healthy? Make sure when they get to Mars, they can walk around and they're not just spaghetti people. So we're learning all those small steps need to be taken. So we're targeting those further destinations and at the same time taking the steps to build a spacecraft that could launch from the U.S. that will bring us to the space station, but also to asteroids, to the moon, and eventually on to Mars.
Wow. Katie Coleman, thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much. It was fun to be talking with fellow travelers.
Fellow travelers. I like that. Happy travels, with or without gravity.
Thank you. We're looking forward to having some of your travelers come up there, too.
All right.
What shall we do? What shall we do with all this useless beauty?
Whether or not you actually get a chance to voyage into outer space during your lifetime, there's still plenty of adventure waiting for you down here, back on Mother Earth. Up next, let's check in with listener travel reports and get inspired to explore some new facet of our fascinating planet up close. We're at 877-333-7425. And you can share your comments and travel reports in our feedback forum. That's in the radio department at ricksteves.com.